This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 735 in the series. This session shares the Franklin Mass School Committee Budget Subcommittee meeting held on Thursday, February 17, 2022. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid manner with most participants in the third floor training room. One member, along with the public, joined via the conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. School Superintendent Sarah Ahern and the subcommittee chair, Dave McNeil, opened the meeting at 5:04 p.m. The show notes contain a link to the agenda and to my notes. The recording runs just about 50 minutes. So let's listen to the budget subcommittee meeting of February 17, 2022.
We are good.
All right. Time being 5:04. Call the February 17th budget subcommittee of the Texas School Committee to order. So, first item on the agenda, approval of minutes. The other members got a chance to take a look at the minutes.
Because we're on Zoom and Dave's participating, I might see to see you do attendance via roll call.
All right, of course. First off, let's do attendance roll call. Megan Whitmore?
Present.
Dave Callahan?
Present.
And Dave McNeil? Present. Second on the agenda, so approval of minutes. We have a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
All right. Well,
second.
Say around a second. All right. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Minutes from the previous budget subcommittee meeting are approved. All right. See that the first item on the agenda after that is the FY23 budget development discussion. Would Miriam or Sarah like to take us away with that?
I'll start sort of high level and big picture, and then Miriam can talk a little bit more about some of the details. So this is, in advance of the superintendent's recommended budget going to the full school committee at the March 8th meeting. This is kind of an early preview to the budget subcommittee. We don't have the budget books developed yet or the presentation, but we want to kind of have you have an opportunity for input at a first pass before we go through the process of putting together those budget books and the March 8th presentation. The budget is prepared with the administrative team. Each school has a school council and teachers and parents and family representatives who participate on those school councils in order to have some input into what the local needs are at each building. Miriam puts out a allocation, a site-based allocation to each school. The site-based allocations are based on the numbers of students who attend that school. We do factor in the same way that Chapter 70 is allocated. We do factor in that the cost of high school is a little bit higher than middle school, is a little bit higher than elementary school. And we do acknowledge and recognize that some of our schools have a higher percentage of free and reduced lunch students. And so the site-based allocations are kind of reflected there. The principals work on putting together their site-based budgets with Miriam. If there's major changes, they might bring me into the loop. We meet as a leadership team, first at the level. So we met with elementary principals, middle school principals, and the high school team, as central office team members. We also meet with the Office of Student Services. We meet with the Office of Teaching and Learning regarding how they see the budget shaping up, given the future goals in those areas. And lastly, the entire team meets together to review how budget priorities are shaping up and looking to come together. Big picture. I think that the narrative around the budget and where Franklin Public Schools is continues to be the same, but perhaps maybe felt a little bit more acutely as a result of the pandemic. So we are in a period of enrollment decline. This is natural based on birth rates in town. I know that there's been some misinformation and some concerns that we have a lot of students leaving and exiting Franklin, but in terms of the numbers, we are faring far better than many comparable districts because there have been some departures from districts as a result of the pandemic. And so we've been watching enrollment carefully. In some cases, we've had an increase or a bump in enrollment unexpectedly based on turnover and home sales last year. Can't foretell what the real estate market will do this spring and summer, but we're trying as best we can to monitor things, and the budget reflects kind of where we currently are at this point in time related to enrollment. So although enrollment is decreasing and that decrease in enrollment is currently being felt mostly at the middle school and high school because the wave of high population of students in the high school is kind of now exiting. When I started 5 years ago, the high school was upwards towards 1,780 students. I don't think we hit 1,800, but we were close to it. And next year, the high school projection is looking to be more like 1,630. So it's just a natural process of a smaller cohort of kids coming through. We're graduating this year. We're graduating something on the order of 430 students, and we have 280 in kindergarten. So it's just kind of where we are as a district. So with that in mind, the budget is projected or recommended to increase. And the question there is why, with a decrease in enrollment. And what I would share, and this is the acute pandemic piece, is that the needs of students are expanding and changing. And so a lot of the proposed additions to the budget are related to a very specialized set of student services in order to acknowledge and recognize neurodiversity is expanding. We also have more students who are learning English as a second language. And so a lot of the additions are driven in those special categories. Consistent with that too, what you see before you on this spreadsheet relates to the operating budget. We do also have some pandemic grant monies through a special education ARPA grant and the ESSER funds as well to support, in particular, social workers and counselors to continue to support students in some very specific areas. So I think with that, I'll turn it over to Miriam, and she can walk through some of these big high-level pieces.
Sure, thank you. So I will start by just running through some of these pieces with you. Our current FY22 approved budget is $67,820,825. We anticipate level service to be roughly $3.3 million. That's really not new information. Generally, level service falls in the $3 to $3.5 million per year, which is roughly 4.87%. So we don't anticipate that is where we're going to end up, but just so you have some comparison, we're just not going to be able to support that based on what we think our allocation might be right now. So we put forth a recommended budget. The superintendent's recommended budget at this point in time is in the amount of $70,216,996. It's just under a $2.4 million increase. It's a 3.5% increase. There are some new investment initiatives that are detailed below that we can go through in a little more detail amount to about $1 million. We also anticipate some budget reductions to the tune of about $575,000. And we're looking at an increase in using revolving funds to offset some of our budget expenses. The increase would be $550,000. So we currently use about $5 million to offset our budget. And in FY23, we're anticipating using just under $5.6 million. So $5,577,000 we're anticipating. additional documentation you have is a little more detailed. I don't necessarily expect you to go through that line by line tonight, but of course we're welcome to do that if you desire. But instead you have an opportunity to take a look at it, any questions that you might have, and happy to answer them either tonight or at a later date. So in terms of the investment initiatives, which is the green section on this document, we are looking at categories of support staff for students, additional EL teachers, additional literacy specialists, as well as some specialized classroom teachers for our special education program. We're looking for some additional leadership at the middle school for curriculum leaders, and a van driver. We put forth in the capital plan an additional van for our fleet, and so here's the van driver to support that as well. How much more detail you want to get into, or if you have, if you want to go into the questions at this point,
Sure, we can open up to questions at this point. Megan, do you have any questions at this time?
No.
Okay. Dave, do you have any questions at this time?
Not yet, no.
Miriam, so I guess I have it's more overview question, and please feel free to elaborate on what we're saying, that with level service increase would be this 3.3 million number. However, we are falling a good bit short of that with this 2.4, we'll say, million. Let's see, we're having this increase in revolving funds plus this decrease in budget reductions. And then between that increase and that decrease, is it sort of coming out in the wash, or like what are we not going to be providing to the students next year that we are providing this year?
Yeah, so that's a good question. We're still going to be providing the same level of service that we're providing to our students next year. In fact, with some of these additions, I think Dr. Ahern would agree that we will be providing additional services to students because we have fewer students with more needs, with greater needs. We've been able to estimate an amount for that we've been able to reduce the recommended budget by offsetting some prepaid tuition as well as some additional revolving funds, as you see here, included in. So that's really what's helping us balance this budget, particularly with the investment engines that we're looking at. So, and while we are not at a, I think we're also in a position to, if we don't know where we're going to end up with the town allocation at this point.
Sure.
So once that comes out, there are other variables and other factors that we're considering that might be able to bring this down to the town allocation or up in that department. Because, maybe we'll get more. Kind of thinking that.
Yeah.
So the other factors that we are considering is, we are in the middle of negotiations with our contract.
Yep.
For teachers, and so there's an estimate for that built in. We also have some question about our healthcare rates. We don't have a set renewal at this point, so we have an estimate built in, and when that final number comes, that could be a little more favorable. And then we have an opportunity to potentially add some additional revolving funds. Revolving funds are one-time funds, even though their name might be misleading because they evolve from year to year, and we do collect funds and from fee-based program each year. But once, they if you are using in excess of what 1 year you collect, you in essence are potentially causing a problem down the road with this structural deficit to your budget. So we're cautious about how we apply revolving funds, and I don't think that this is a concerning use of the year.
Okay, then that's good to hear. And that kind of goes into a second question in regards to the revolving funds, though. Even though we're doing this increase over FY22 of a little more than $500,000, I still think that it's an increase that we can afford right now. Like, it's gonna, like, the status of revolving funds is going to be okay.
Yeah, I do think it's an increase that we can get to.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Did you want to go into more into some of the specifics of the investment issues, or was there something else that you want to touch on?
If the committee wants to hear more about the investment initiatives, we can certainly speak to that. If you want to look through some of the detail, we can speak to that as well.
I think it might be helpful to go through the investment initiatives. I know that there's some folks joining us on Zoom, and they may be interested to hear what those are and why.
Okay.
Of the arguments for why. Miriam, do you have an updated version? I have one from yesterday.
Sure. I'm seeing a number of these things here with no increase in English language learning, and you mentioned special education, particularly.
Yeah.
Those student populations have been affected.
Yep.
From the pandemic, it might be good to highlight the services that we want to provide for them in the coming school year, or fiscal year, rather.
Yeah, and I can also talk, too, about how we're looking to do things most financially efficiently while also meeting the students' needs, and I think that that's important for people to hear. So the first item that's on this list is an expansion of the NEC Partner Program. This would expand this program, which is for students on the autism spectrum, and these are students who have more significant learning needs than some other members of our population. And we partner with NEC, which is a school. It's got a couple of different locations, but I think it's Natick, where NEC is, and. We started the program at Parmenter for our youngest learners. Actually, I think it was in my second year. We got an earmark from Senator Spilka to plant the seed money for this program. And why that's important is, in part, with the seed money from the state, we were able to set up this program. And these are children who might otherwise be placed out of district. So there's actually a cost savings to the district by setting up the program and having it then be incorporated into our operating budget. We expanded the NEC Partner Program based on student needs and the population over the successive years. And we now have some students who are gonna be in middle school. And so this proposal expands the NEC Partner Program to one of our middle schools. Space is still to be determined. We would be paying for contracted services and two ABA techs. One alternative here was that we would hire our own teacher and have a little bit more of a self-contained program, but this is a more cost-effective approach, is to continue the contracted services with NEC, but hire two ABA techs. This isn't gonna be in order, but I wanna talk a little bit about the English Language Development Department. As I had noted in recent DEI presentations, we've had an expansion in the number of students with English language development based on their language proficiency scores. And so there are some FTEs here proposed to support English learners. And it's not just the numbers that have gone up, and the numbers have gone up, we're in the 90s. But not only have the numbers gone up, but we've also had more students coming in with lower proficiency levels and also limited or interrupted formal education. And so there's a lot of ground to make up, particularly at the high school level when you have students there. And I want to say that when I started, we maybe had 6 students at the high school who are L's, and next year we're looking at having as many as 20 or 22. English learners at Franklin High School. And with the schedule there, it's a pretty complicated position to navigate all of the teachers that students would have, and then also teaching the English language development. So we have a proposal here for an EL teacher at the high school. We're also seeing an expansion of English language development at the middle school and at Keller Elementary School. We have one teacher proposed to be shared between Oak and Horace Mann, and we're proposing to support that teacher with an ESP that would help with English language development. And this ESP could also float across the district. One challenge we've had with English learning is that we don't have subs that can, you know, kind of execute the lesson plans at a high level. And so the ESP could help us out by floating across the district and being an English language development sub for when a teacher is out. So that was actually something that we've had a lot of success with in the nursing department with kind of our COVID nurses. And so that's a model that we'd like to extend to the English language development. Keller Elementary School, as you know, has the largest population of our elementary schools. And we kept a math specialist on to support students, particularly as we bring on, and teachers, particularly as we bring on a new math program. And next area of focus for curriculum review was going to be English language arts. And I said that ELA focus would be FY23 and FY24 is going to be a big English language arts focus while we continue to also work with a new math program. I think that the Keller administration has a lot on their plates in terms of the number of staff without any additional administrative help for supervision and evaluation. And while this is not an administrator and not somebody who would do observations and evaluation, I think would be a critical member of the Keller leadership team. And I think they've had some success with a second math literacy specialist, but are kind of struggling to provide the necessary supports in the area of literacy. So we're proposing a literacy specialist to be added to the faculty and staff at Keller. We had a conversation last summer prior to the election with the school committee about restoring an art director at Franklin High School, which would be a 0.6 position. We did a search mid-year or in the fall, I think, or late in the summer. It did not yield a successful candidate, so we left that vacant, but needed to formally fold that into the budget. I think it's really important. I think it's a position that you can forego for a year or two, perhaps, but then your program starts to suffer. And given the expectations and desires of community members towards the arts, I think it's an important position to restore. In terms of special education, we have an expanding population of students with emotional and behavioral disorders. The students' numbers are getting high up at Franklin High School, and we try to keep small classrooms and ratios. So we have an additional teacher for the REACH program proposed for Franklin High School and an ESP. I don't think I wrote that in the notes. As we had talked about recently, this formally puts another ECDC classroom for intensive needs students and the ESPs to accommodate the additional students. Of note, we currently have 140 students at ECDC, which is about 30 more students than we had when Jerry McKibben did his demographic enrollment forecast. So we've really seen an expansion of participation of students at ECDC. I think that may be a little bit of an echo from the pandemic in terms of families keeping their children out of preschool for a period of time, but we do anticipate continuing to need that additional intensive needs classroom next year. We have upwards of 200 and something students on IEPs at Franklin High School and only one team chair, which is really an unhealthy ratio. So we have a proposal for a half-time team chair to support all of the teachers and families and students as it relates to the special education process. Linda and Tina here in the central office and Office of Teaching and Learning have done a really amazing job at kicking off some important curriculum initiatives. And one area that does not have the same level of leadership and support for curriculum and instruction as elementary and high school does is middle school. We do have some stipends for some teachers, but they're also full-time teachers and can't do kind of the required development and coaching. So we have a proposal here for two FTEs for middle school teachers related to curriculum leadership, and that would cover all three middle schools. We are proposing some stipends for elementary teachers to step into teacher leadership roles. One of the things that we've heard from our faculty and staff is an interest and real desire to have more voice and to contribute. But I think it's only fair that if we're asking them to do some additional leadership work, particularly if it's after the school day, that they be stipended for that. As you know, our capital plan has an additional van proposed to be added to the fleet, and we would need to hire a driver to accommodate. And this is based on needs and requirements we have from the government around providing a free and appropriate public education, which includes specialized transportation if necessary. The goals program is expanding. So we are proposing one teacher to the Remington Middle School to expand GOALS. GOALS is another one of our specialized programs that supports students on the autism spectrum. Compared to the NEC partner program, students who have services through GOALS, their needs are not typically as intense, although they certainly do have some specialized needs that necessitate these program services. At the high school, we are proposing two additional paraprofessionals, or ESPs, to support the STRIVE program. The STRIVE program, as you might recall, is for students with multiple disabilities, significant disabilities. It starts at Keller and Sullivan and goes in all the way up to the high school. And we have a need based on the students in that group to add two ESPs. We have students who remain with us beyond graduation based on their transitional educational needs. And so we are looking for one academic tutor to support a student to attend, I think, Bridgewater State through what's called the MACE program. So it's kind of a transition period of time to post-secondary education. We are proposing an additional special educator at the Kennedy Elementary School to accommodate students there. And then we have a number of students who receive Wilson Language Services based on reading disabilities and are proposing a 1.0 FTE for a teacher to teach Wilson. I think that this list, really reflects a value that we have around supporting students and supporting all of their needs and trying to educate them in the least restrictive environment. And I will note that many of these students, if we didn't have these programs, would be placed in out-of-district placements with higher cost tuitions. So it benefits us all and is also fiscally responsible. So those are some of the pieces. I should say and do want to say that considerations from the budget subcommittee and from the school committee in terms of your priorities were also examined. A couple of things that aren't on this list, but we did talk about. We talked about how we might be able to introduce elementary Spanish to the district. We also talked about music through a part-time strings teacher for the elementary. And we also talked about having a library director for K-8 to examine our library services. The elementary principals loved all of those ideas. We also talked a little bit about STEM and coding, loved all of those ideas. And our recommendation is to have like early on next year with teachers' involvement, kind of like a study and planning committee in order to rethink some aspects of the elementary schedule and elementary specials to kind of build a program that would be more encompassing and more inclusive of different options and opportunities. They felt that to do it right now at this time, we'd be sort of piecing things together to an existing structure that might not suit everybody's needs. And so they wanted to do a little bit of a study around that. We talked about having an EL director for the district. With the number of students that we have, that might be something from a leadership standpoint that the committee may wish to consider in the future. And then a lot of things related to social and emotional supports are folded into the ESSER III grant. And so that includes two counselors, one at the middle school and one at the high school, to support what's called the BRIGHT program, which would be to support students who are returning to school from hospitalizations or who are returning to school after having a concussion. That would be through the ESSER III grant. We also have proposed a social worker through the ESSER III grant for the district and a social worker for ECDC through the special ed ARPA grant that we'll be receiving. So we did take into account some of those social and emotional learning pieces in grant funding. So just wanted to kind of close the loop and circle back with you on all of those. I think it'll be easier to see. We're doing a lot of like talking when we put together, the final superintendent's recommended budget presentation. This will all be packaged neatly together for you so you can see it all laid out. Happy to answer any questions or happy to hear your input and feedback if there's anything that you are wondering about, questioning about, or would want to see.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah.
Yeah. All right, if I may.
Yep, go ahead. Can you hear me?
Awesome. Yep, I gotcha. Okay. So I had two questions. One, I think maybe more for Miriam or whomever, but so the healthcare rates, when do we anticipate those to come in? Even kind of like a rough idea.
So I was hoping to have those at least a renewal this week. We actually were scheduled to meet with the IAC, the Influence Advisory Council, today, but we didn't have any information to give them. So we're like waiting for our renewal like any minute now. And so we have a placeholder in there based on trends, and our trends from what we're hearing from our interim consultants are running themselves around 8%. We don't know where that's going to end up once the renewal comes in, and we're waiting to see the renewal and then see what other options we might have that might be more cost-effective and yet still provide the same level of coverage.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Sure.
And so, Dr. Hearn, I just want to just to confirm, so everything, all the investments, everything kind of in that green block is not part of the ESSER funding. So anything that we're kind of looking to adopt in here would just be part of our standard budget, kind of, you know, from 1 year to the next without worrying about the deadlines and when ESSER might expire. Is that correct?
Yes. So everything in the green block would be proposed for the operating budget and wouldn't have kind of an expiration date related to the grant. Other items for the grant would expire potentially in another two fiscal years. So you would have that money for FY23 and FY24. So that would be the BRIGHT program and the social worker and the director of DEI that I had talked about. We also have interventionists proposed for continued funding. what I would offer in terms of like a long-term plan there is that as you consider enrollment declines over the course of time, there may be a way to kind of creatively reallocate and bring those positions into your budget.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Dr. Hearn.
Thank you, Dave. Megan, do you have any questions?
Well, I guess I do one quick question. Of course, for the insurance plan, I'm curious, how is it like, is it a self-funded plan, or how does that work?
So, sure. So right now, it's a fully insured plan through Harvard Pilgrim. A self-funded plan is something that we are exploring as well through a trust. And again, that's something that we've introduced to the Insurance Advisory Council. So the Insurance Advisory Council is basically made up of the heads of each of the unions who then come together and talk about the insurance plan. And once we get the rates, determine whether or not they're comfortable with that rate as a whole of the group, or whether we want to look at maybe plan design changes to reduce the rate see where basically where that lands and what the plan might look like. At this point, given that it's a fully insured plan, we are looking at an opportunity for a self-insured plan, which may be a savings, but it's too early for us to sell at this point. So that could very well be an option, and then the insurance advisory would make that.
Thank you. I'd just like to say thank you very much for this presentation, going over with us. Thank you for all the hard work you've been putting in with developing the proposed budget for FY23. I think these investment initiatives are great in terms of seeing the needs from a very balanced perspective, with restoring art director, trying to reincorporate some things that were lost and back into the services that we're offering our students, but in particular with increasing and addressing services and needs for special education and English language and socio-emotional learning, as well as we're seeing here with the curriculum development. I think it's a very wise approach for balance that we're addressing here, and thank you for that. Could you maybe touch on a little bit with the middle school leadership, the curriculum development there, just what this new position will be able to kind of help this big picture in terms of addressing either curriculum deficiencies or expanding on the curriculum that are offered?
Yeah, so I think it's a matter of formalizing some of our curriculum work in the four main content areas of science, math, ELA, and social studies, putting together a guaranteed and viable written curriculum that is consistent across all classrooms, including all three middle schools. It is far too much and complex a job for just Tina and Linda to do when they're responsible for these efforts across the entire district. And we've got some pretty big initiatives going on at the elementary right now, including a new math adoption and a real, real big need to review reading and early literacy. And so we really are lacking that kind of middle level curriculum leadership structure at the middle level. We have department heads at the high school. We have grades 6 through 12 department directors for, we're restoring it for art and music and world language. The math CETs do a phenomenal job around supporting curriculum efforts in math. And so I think that that's kind of the strongest, model that we have. But we don't have that same level of support in ELA and science. And social studies, we do have teachers who are stipended. They plan department meetings and they do some great work, but because they teach full time, there is really no time for them to be in classrooms, for them to work with teachers and coaching instruction. And I think that that these supports are really needed, particularly for new teachers. I'm a little concerned about retention of middle school teachers. We've got some turnover, particularly in math and science, and would love to see some additional support being provided to our middle school math and science teachers. Our science curriculum materials are expiring and are in need of a refresh, and teachers are going to need support in terms of implementing some new science materials at the middle level. So those are some of the pieces. I think for social studies, we are still transitioning to the new frameworks that came out in 2018, and you know, they're pretty different. I mean, in terms of the middle school, the whole scope and sequence and everything has shifted. And so eighth grade is now doing civics, and world history went up to the high school. And so having some teacher leadership, and these would be, wouldn't be administrators, they'd be like teacher leaders to work on curriculum development and coaching of our middle school teachers is what we're proposing. It's a gap that we have in our structure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for highlighting that. I think this is a wonderful example of how investing now can certainly not only save a lot later, but also address other interrelated and structural issues. I mean, you mentioned, of course, how this touches on teacher support and retention, and then also getting, you know, putting these positions in place now will ensure that we are providing better curriculum for our students down the line in the future. So I think, yeah, thank you for touching on that.
I think it's also an opportunity around a way to provide teachers with leadership opportunities and something of a career ladder. You know, right now we've got classroom teachers, we have building administrators, and we have central office. And at least at the middle level, there aren't as much kind of career opportunities. And so I do see this as a potential way for somebody who might be aspiring to continue to have, you know, kind of that connection to schools, but want to do something a little different and exercise some different career skills, that this might be an interesting opportunity. So I would hope, really, truly, that we might have some people on staff who would be interested in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more our teachers are, you know, investing in their own professional development, the better our students benefit from it. So, and thank you for that. And maybe just touch on one more thing. And you mentioned specifically, I believe it was the FHS REACH program, with how important that has been with behavioral issues that we've been seeing lately. Could you just maybe touch on that a little bit? And more in particularly of how that will help the student and teacher population going forward as we continue to transition.
Sure. Sure. I think that the REACH program has been in place for a while. It is also a program that is K through 12. So we have classrooms at Oak, Horace Mann, and at the high school. Students in the program are assigned services through here based on their IEP. Basically, again, it's as a result of an emotional disability. And the classrooms are intentionally designed to be small with a low student to teacher ratio. There are ESPs to support, and students are included, much like our other programs are included for academics, or they may have academics being taught within the REACH classroom. Franklin High School is really big and can be really daunting for lots of students. For students with emotional disabilities, that gets magnified, and it manifests in some challenging behaviors. The behaviors can manifest in two different ways. One might be external, and you see aggression. You might see aggression towards others, aggression towards themselves, destruction in the classroom. And so this small space with a supportive network of adults working with the students, and the students supporting each other too. It's actually you know, pretty amazing to see them support each other, is what's really needed for the students to navigate such a big place like Franklin High School. conversely, we also have students in the REACH program who might have internalized behaviors. They may be withdrawn. These are students who might be at risk for things like cutting or self-harm. And so that is also a profile of student that we're serving in the REACH program. And the small group space with low student-to-teacher ratio really helps them navigate what is a pretty big and daunting high school.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for extrapolating that. I think it's fantastic that we can provide in school these services for students that do need it the most. I think what you also said just touched on how these programs don't just affect and help the students that are enrolled in the programs, but they also, the assistance that they get, that has a ripple effect on also improving the quality of the educational experience for other students and the teachers, and ripples out to the broader FHS and FPS community. So I think the fact that we provide these programs in-house is, again, an excellent investment in the well-being, both emotionally and academically, of our student body. So thank you very much. And I'd like to also thank again for touching on the fact that if we weren't providing many of these programs in-house, it would come at a greater cost to have these students go elsewhere. So I think that's not only of direct benefit to the students, but also long-term financial benefit to the whole districts, which can then be reinvested in other initiatives. So also fiscally responsible. Thank you for highlighting that as well.
Sure.
Are there any other questions from members?
Yeah, thank you. I have one question, just a kind of minute one about a line item. Historically, have the crossing guards always been like a salaried position? Has it ever been a volunteer position, to anyone's knowledge?
It's always been a paid position. Right now we actually only have one crossing guard in the district, and our ESPs take on that position based on their contractual rate. So they serve as crossing guards primarily for the one that does primarily and strictly only do crossing for us, and we very much appreciate it. But we've never, to my knowledge, I've been here 13 years, and we've never had volunteers.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
If there's no other questions, is there anything else that either Sarah or Miriam you'd like to add?
No, I think I really appreciate your questions and the interest that you've shown. I mean, I would just frame some next steps, which would be we'll put together budget books. Every committee member will get a budget book. There had been a migration piece to put the budget book on the website. And really trying to be, open and transparent about how funds are applied in the district. That would happen or be issued in the first week in March is, I think in advance of it's big. So it'd be in advance of your packet. We wouldn't want to put it, wait till that Friday. But the first week in March, we would issue that to the committee in advance of a presentation on the 8th. And then from there, 2 weeks after that is the budget hearing. The process for that is that it gets formally posted in the newspaper and advertised. We'd have the budget hearing 2 weeks after March 8th meeting, so that would be March 22nd, I believe. And at the hearing, we read, the chair reads line by line, the major, not line by line, but the major line items of the budget, and all committee members can ask a question. And those two evenings are really your opportunity to have budget discussions as a committee. This committee should meet in between March 8th and March 22nd, and then we should meet again between March 22nd and the adoption of the budget, which is slated for the April 12th meeting, in advance of FinCom and Town Council later on. So we should probably plan to schedule a meeting between the 8th and 22nd, and between the 22nd and April 12th.
All right, well, sounds great. And this committee looks forward to the work we're going to be doing, and I'm sure our chair looks forward to reading all those line items.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, there we go.
One thing that I would hope or ask this committee to consider, in the past, previous committees have not done much discussion of the budget on the first night of the presentation, and I think it is a potential missed opportunity. You have, I think you're all very well informed of the recent past history of the budget. There's like no rule that there can't be any discussion that night. People have just been reluctant, I think, to have a budget discussion. So we're going to try to get you the information in advance and ahead of time so that March 8th can be a discussion about the budget versus simply a presentation.
Absolutely. That'd be fantastic.
Because I think that would be more informative to the development, because we are not, well, you know, while a number has not been formalized by the town administrator, this is the lowest percent I've put out in my time as superintendent. But you know, we're still, I would anticipate based on what we're hearing about new growth that we still have a little bit to close and some decisions to make too. So it's an iterative process.
Absolutely. And we have the Joint Budget Subcommittee meeting that we look forward
yes,
to.
Yes, that's right.
Our conversation as well.
Yes, that's on March 10th.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. Busy, but we're up to the task. All right. If there be nothing else, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
None. The ayes have it. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good evening, everyone.
Have a great night, everybody.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.